meeting of the minds to combat homelessness in Northeast Florida. Good Tuesday morning. And live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app, listen there anytime or on iTunes. We're also streaming the show live right now on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Just ahead, what's happening this week to combat homelessness on the First Coast? We'll tell you about it. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, our Movable Feast series speaks with event planner Ann Urban. She's got some great summer entertaining ideas for you. This month's Woman with Heart, it's Baptist Health's Nicole Thomas. And we remember the late Jacksonville attorney and environmental activist Bill Brinton. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, a new look at the best way to end homelessness on the First Coast. The National Group Lead Homelessness is convening top leaders around this area on the JU campus tomorrow. And among other things, they'll learn how Orlando, Florida, has transformed its approach to dealing with that city's homeless population. What can we learn from Central Florida and from other cities around the country? Dawn Gilman is CEO of Changing Homelessness. She's on the line with a preview. Dawn, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us. And when it comes to ending homelessness on the First Coast, what are your questions and thoughts? Give us a call right now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax or weigh in on Facebook. So a big confab on the Jacksonville University campus tomorrow. What's going to be happening? Dawn Gilman, set the stage for us.
Okay. As you mentioned at the top of the hour, we are inviting Lead Homelessness to come and talk to a group of people, leaders in the Jacksonville area who are interested in ending homelessness. Lead Homelessness has been studying those communities across the country that have made significant progress in reducing and ending homelessness, and they are going to talk about the 12 essential steps or actions that each of those communities took to really move the needle where they are. We are also going to do an overview of what the state of homelessness is in Northeast Florida and look at a deep data dive that another group, Focus Strategies, was able to has given some preliminary data on, looking at our own data, the data that our different agencies from around the First Coast input into the homeless management information system.
Okay, well, where are we when it comes to reducing the homeless count in this area?
You know, we are really good on veterans. We have reduced veteran homelessness by close to 80% in the last 5 years. So from that, we know how to really drive those numbers down. The agencies that are active in housing, homeless, especially homeless veterans, have essentially recreated a system of care that quickly responds to any veteran household that has a housing crisis to either prevent that homelessness or ensure that they are rapidly rehoused if they do become homeless.
Okay, so doing well with veterans, but maybe not so well with the general population. Where do we need to improve there? And what are we learning from other cities, Dawn, like Orlando? What effectiveness have they seen with changing their approach?
Well, what Orlando has done especially well is working with a group of people that are that meet the definition of chronically homeless. These are people with a diagnosed disability and have spent a year or more homeless. These are usually the people that are well-known to all of the crisis responders in our area, whether it be JSO or our hospitals. So Orlando took a look at their population and realized that's where the majority of the money was being spent, but not being spent to get these people into housing and get them stable. So Orlando has really focused on something called permanent supportive housing. That's housing that these individuals can maintain for themselves with wraparound support. And with that, while we've had a really great reduction in veteran homelessness, Orlando has been able to do what we have not in the Chronic Arena, which is really move, reduce the number of persons who meet that definition.
And what are your thoughts and questions about reducing the homeless population in our area? We'll go to your calls in a moment for Dawn Gilman of Changing Homelessness at 549-2937. So what's Orlando doing right that we're doing wrong?
You know, Orlando is about, I think, a year or two ahead of us. I think they have really focused on a model called Housing First, which means moving the most vulnerable people off the street and into housing and giving them those wraparound supports that they need to maintain that housing. They have looked at their shelter system and seen if they could reduce barriers for people to come off the streets into shelter and then start that trajectory into permanent supportive housing if needed or into other housing. And a lot of it is really focus on, you know, what actually works. The tagline in the national studies are evidence-based and data-driven, which means really looking at what are the outcomes or what are you purchasing with these dollars. If the goal is to reduce street homelessness, what programs or approaches really work in getting people off the street and then into housing, and most importantly, watching them for the next year or two to make sure that they don't become homeless again.
And so when you have this meeting Wednesday on the JU campus, you'll share this with leaders around the community. What are the biggest barriers we have here in Jacksonville to adopting this approach? Is it a lack of funding, lack of political will, maybe both?
I would say both. Part of building that that will and understanding is also an education process. That's part of why we engage with focused strategies to really look at our own data. So it's better explained and understood by a broader group of people. That's our first toe in the water there. I also think it's helping people understand that homelessness is a big social problem, but it is a solvable problem. And I guess I should explain. When I say ending homelessness, I don't mean that there'll never be another housing crisis in Duval Clay or Nassau County. What I mean is we'll have a system that's in place that we can respond to that crisis. So if any household is about to become homeless or does become homeless, we can find them and assist them within 30 days.
Let's go to your calls now for Dawn Gilman of Changing Homelessness, 549-2937. Bianca in Arlington. Hey, Bianca, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I love listening to the morning station. So my question is, do we have any funding or programs for combating the mental illness side of homelessness? And I'll take your comments.
Yeah, thank you for that. And there's an important update. Lots of updates to share there, too. Dawn Gilman, there's been a lot of work on that in this area. Can you bring us up to date?
Yes, and Bianca, that is an excellent question. In Florida, we do not fund mental health programs at the same level as other states. So that has, throughout the state, that has persistently been one of our weak areas. But to answer your question, there are certain programs that are specifically targeted for persons with severe and persistent mental illness that are also homeless. There is some funding through HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, through our Continuum of Care grant, where we do have permanent supportive housing specifically for people who are chronically homeless and with severe mental illness. There are also other programs through the state of Florida. One that I'm thinking of is through MHRC. It is an outreach and housing program, again, to go out and engage those people who are on the street and then get them into housing with ongoing help and treatment for their mental illness. But you are right. That is about 30 to 50% of the people who are chronically homeless, or maybe even higher on the chronically homeless part, have a mental illness. And when they are on the streets, it's extremely difficult for them to maintain, you know, doctor's appointments, be able to fill prescriptions that help them function in our society. So that is something we're definitely going to look at. Part of what we're doing over the summer and into the fall is really looking at where are our unmet needs and is there a way to fill those gaps. And I'm pretty sure that mental health will be part of that discussion.
And a recent JCCI study on this, Jacksonville Community Council, Inc., established a system-wide collaborative task force looking at all of these issues, Don Gilman, including a new facility, a new intake center for people that are at risk,
yes,
of homelessness or are dealing with mental illness issues that might be contributing to homelessness. Where do things stand with that?
That pilot has started and it's underway. It appears to be very effective in its early stages. I apologize. I just got a report on it and I have not had a chance to read how the first 3 to 6 months are going. But it is a low barrier, meaning people can walk in and pretty quickly get the services that they need to help them out. That may be something for a show with MHRC and Lutheran Services Florida that is helping to spearhead, and Mental Health America helping to spearhead,
yeah,
those activities on how that is doing. Some of those people are homeless. Some of them are in housing but just don't have access to the mental health care that they need.
Lots of calls for Don Gilman, CEO of Changing Homelessness, in advance of a big confab on this issue tomorrow on the Jacksonville University campus. What are your questions? 549-2937. Valerie in Riverside. Hey, Valerie.
Hi, how are you?
All right, thanks.
I'm just wondering, I've seen a few other cities that have taken initiatives to start like tiny home communities for homeless and for people who are at risk of being homeless. And I'm wondering if that's anything that's on the horizon for us.
Sure.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, thanks for that.
All right, Valerie, I often get questions on tiny homes. And so I have three questions that I always ask back. The first one is, can you legally build them? Meaning, are there any ordinances on square footage per person, per dwelling size? Will they be hooked up to utilities? I know that sounds silly, but there are some of these tiny home communities that do not have a plan for everything to be hooked up to electric, water, and sewer. So that's really important if people are going to live there. And the third question is, how will that community be maintained? So tiny homes are something that a lot of people are looking at to expand the number of affordable housing units within a given community. Not everybody wants to live in a tiny home. Some people would. I am watching Savannah, Georgia is working on a community of tiny homes. And I also know of another community in Alabama that put just a small number of.
And Dawn, when we say tiny home, what are we talking about? How many square feet?
Okay, so some tiny homes are as small as 250 square feet. So we're talking about the size of a small hotel room.
Okay.
Some tiny homes are up to 800 square feet. So some tiny homes come with a small kitchen, individual bathroom, a bedroom door that shuts. Some are just a very small box, so to speak.
Huh.
So it's really important when we talk about solving the issue of homelessness, if we're going to build something, to make sure it's something that people would want to live in. That's part of why people stay. And again, that maintaining that community piece. If people take pride in their dwelling and where they live, they help maintain that space and make it desirable for other people.
Sure. Interesting to see, though, that other cities are looking at this. There's certainly interest in it. Let's go to some more calls for Don Gilman. 949-2937. Barbara at the Beaches. Hey, Barbara. How are you?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to mention real quickly, again, I call as a member of the organization that's been trying to get this issue dealt with by our city people, the head people downtown, and which hasn't been too successful to date. But I'd like to mention two things that in reference to some of the questions that are coming in. One is, when I was a guidance counselor some years ago, and I was on the west side, we had a number of folks coming down from Midwest and North because they had lost jobs. And they believed that Florida was just, you know, this place that they would easily get a job somewhere, especially in the fields or something. Mm-hmm. And many of these parents ended up with their children sleeping in the cars. And so when these little kids would come in the morning, they were hardly prepared to attend school and concentrate at all. And I think things are much better now, but it's still a real big issue about, you know, people being left to sleep on concrete with young children. So I think ICARE is still in there, you know, fighting away, but I'm glad to hear that there's others that are, you know, interested in that such an activity is going to start tomorrow. Thank
sure.
you for taking my call.
Oh, thank you, Barbara. Thanks for sharing that memory. And Dawn, to be clear, you're bringing together a whole coalition of interested parties and stakeholders with this event tomorrow.
Yes. We have had a coalition of providers for years. We used to be called the Emergency Services and Homeless Coalition of Jacksonville. That group started in 1978. There's about 40 to 50 member agencies. These are service providers in the area. Of course, they have been invited and probably will be participating in the meeting tomorrow. The broader goal is to pull in that Big C community, the rest of the community that may not have a day-to-day interaction or interest in this issue, but people who are interested in solving it. So we do invite everyone that has an interest, if they are able to come out and learn more about this. This is just the first of our engagements, our meetings, to try to, number one, educate people on what's really working across the country, and secondly, get them plugged in so they learn more, know more, and are able to help us solve homelessness.
And William in downtown Jacksonville emails the show, are there any plans for affordable housing for homeless people in areas of North Florida that currently have little to none? For example, at the Beaches, St. John's, Clay, Nassau counties, going beyond Duval County in the city center. Don Gilman.
Yes. We have a couple of different member agencies that are very good at developing deeply affordable housing. Kind of like with the tiny homes question before, and many times when we say affordable housing, it's housing for people who are just below our area median income. For our population, for people who are homeless, it has to be what we call deeply affordable. These are different units, sometimes complexes that are built where a certain number of those units people can move into with zero income, and then work their way up to paying 30% of their income.
Okay.
Yeah. Right now, I don't know of too many that are in the pipeline, but that is something that we're always looking for, a way to develop more affordable housing.
And here's a comment for you from Samantha on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. What about using something like the Housing First program used in Salt Lake City, Utah?
Samantha, that is exactly what we are going to be talking about. Salt Lake City, Utah is one of the shining stars of a community that has been able to really reduce homelessness, and they completely focus on that Housing First model. That is what all of our permanent supportive housing is, the Housing First model, and we are trying to move that through our whole system, so people are able to understand what that means and how it benefits the people that we serve.
Ricky on the north side. Hey, Ricky. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm going to find out about that housing that's right there at the convention center on Bay Street. if that housing there is what we're looking for homeless, which includes myself, homeless folks and, you know, people with low income. It's a large housing development right there on Bay Street. You can't miss it.
Sure. Yeah, right by the Prime Osborne. Thanks for that call, Ricky. Yeah, what about, is that going to be affordable housing? What's the status of that project? Don Gilman.
That is being developed by Vestcor, and I believe that is considered affordable, which means people at area median income, they would be able to rent and afford to move in there. I do not believe any of that is going to be designated as deeply affordable or specifically for persons who have experienced homelessness.
Will it be a Section 8 project?
No, I don't believe it's a Section 8 project.
Okay, but that is going to be an affordable housing option. And so, with all of that said, how can people be part of tomorrow's big event on the Jacksonville University campus? It's at Davis College of Business, right?
Yes, it's... at the Public Policy Institute, which is within the Davis College of Business at Jacksonville University. Registration starts at 8 o'clock, and the program will begin at 8:30.
She's Dawn Gilman, CEO of Changing Homelessness. Thanks so much for this preview.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
All right, and much more still ahead later. Find out why Nicole Thomas of Baptist Health is this month's Woman with Heart here on the First Coast. But up next, summer entertaining ideas to keep you cool. That's in our Movable Feast. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Your taste buds aren't the only thing that affects your food, you know. Music, atmosphere, how much your fork weighs, apparently.
We've been kind of missing the science of the diner, of the mind of the diner. And our enjoyment of food doesn't happen in our mouth, really. It actually happens in our mind.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Sensory Seasoning, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT's Great Auction is where you'll find over 300 items, most starting at a fraction of their value, at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. Bid now. The auction continues through June 26th at 8 p.m. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
Welcome back. Well, she started out as a social director at her college sorority and went on to build an event planning empire. In today's Movable Feast, our new look at dining and hospitality trends across the area, we've got some ideas for summer entertaining as Lee Cord of the Women's Food Alliance speaks with Ann Urban, a business owner who has special events in her DNA.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it to gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato plate too.
Well, I'm delighted today to invite Ann Urban to Movable Feast because every time I think of her event planning companies, I always think of her on the move. And she creates these amazing ambiance for parties and special events, not just in Northeast Florida, but really internationally. So Ann Urban, welcome, and share with our listeners some of the companies that you've created over the past two decades.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you for inviting me to be here, Lee.
It's been 16 years since I started the first company, which was Destination Planning Corporation. And we specialize in that company in working with companies and associations from all over the world, bringing their meetings and events to North Florida. And so we are basically the general contractors of meetings and events for them. So we handle everything from tours, activities, transportation management, themed events, trade show management, a little bit of everything for them. We're their army here on the ground to get the job done. And then in 2009, I purchased a company called Center Stage, entertainment and event rentals, and that kind of changed my world. It increased my inventory significantly, and I acquired a very large warehouse where I store all the equipment. And with that contract, we were able to actually go and bid on the city of Jacksonville, their special events, tents, tables, chairs, production that we're able to do there. So we were awarded the contract for 3 years, and then just recently they just signed another 3 years with us. We're also in our second round of contracts, another 3 years with the Jacksonville Fairgrounds as their official in-house decorator. So do all their pipe and drape and decorating there for their events.
For our listeners, in addition to some of the major numbers of chairs and tables and tents, what are some of the themed events that you create that we can envision if you share with us?
We've done everything that you can imagine. Just this past week, I'll give you an example. We did a 1920s speakeasy theme for the Florida Theater. They're celebrating their 90th anniversary, and they had a 1920s speakeasy theme. But we've done every conceivable you can imagine. People ask me what my favorite themes are, and I have to say it was a 007 event that we did at Hammock Beach, where we flew in a CEO with two women dressed. Their whole body was in gold paint, and it was the Goldfinger theme, and it was unbelievable. I mean, it was very, very fun and exciting to see the helicopter land on their main platform there, and then we just took it from there and did a whole 007.
How did you decide that special events and parties and themed extravaganzas were the perfect fit for you in your career?
You know, I never dreamed. My background's hotel management, and that's what landed me in Jacksonville 26 years ago, was when I got transferred here. However, when I look back on my life, I was in my sorority at University of Maryland. I was the social director. And so right back then, I started planning all of our rush parties and everything that we did on campus. And then I just found more and more people kept inviting me to, oh, will you help my sister? She's getting married. And will you do this? Will you do that? And when I really look back, I probably have been in the event business since I started walking.
It's in your DNA.
Yeah, I really think it is. And it's one of those, because our company does about 400 plus events a year. And now the wedding side of our business has grown. I opened a company called Florida Wedding Supplies. And that's for the do-it-yourself bride that thinks they want to do it themselves and then finds out that they really don't. A lot of times they'll come. They will rent from us sometimes, just our vases and things. But 9 times out of 10, they end up really contracting us to do everything for them. And you know, so we've gone from doing not just festivals, yes, and corporate themed events, but doing full wedding planning. I did a beautiful, beautiful wedding recently at a 10-acre horse farm up in Amelia Island. Did a gorgeous wedding in the Dominican Republic recently, and
that's why I mentioned international.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
so
I found just working here.
That's right. We're traveling everywhere. The most recent fun thing I did was work the jazz festival. You know, we produced all the tents, tables, chairs, and the VIP areas and things. And I personally was there for the overnight teardown and got to see the sun come up as we tore down the jazz festival and then immediately transferred over to the memorial wall and set up over 2,000 chairs and tents, so that by the time the city got there to celebrate the memorial celebration at 9 a.m., it was all done. And that was a great experience, I'll tell you.
You are amazingly capable of turning your hat around every hour. But I learned something about you yesterday that really has stuck with me, and it's about accountability. And that when you have a company as successful and diverse and multifaceted as your company's, clients may not even think that they have access to you because there are so many people in between you and the finished event. But you said something yesterday at a luncheon that we attended together, and you said that your clients have access to you when they are in panic mode, that occasionally they can find you, or maybe often they do, and it could be the middle of the night when they really need you.
Yes, I have a policy in place that when the office is closed, all the phones always roll over to me, and I'm available 24 hours a day, and I do that because, number one, I know I'll answer the phone. Number two, I'm going to have to ultimately make the decision on whether or not we can assist the customer that needs it. And we did. I shared a story yesterday where we had a client that called panicking. Something had happened where some of their inventory was missing, and they called us late Saturday afternoon for a Saturday night wedding. And as it turned out, the inventory they couldn't find, and I was able to jump in and help save the day, and the bride never even had to worry about anything. We made it happen.
That's the way to run a business. Mm-hmm. Well, we are in the nice warm weather of pre-summer here in North Florida, mm-hmm. and I know you have a lot of events coming up, and people love to entertain, and people love to think that they can plan their own parties, and oftentimes they can. But I thought maybe you'd leave our listeners with some hints of party faux pas or some hints for summer entertaining that they may not have thought about.
Sure. One thing I want to remind people who are planning their parties during the summer months, we get a lot of panicked calls from people who forget to get tents because they think they only need tents if it's going to rain. And I want to remind people a couple things. The reason why you want a tent is more than just to protect yourself from rain. It's a great shade factor. The heat is very strong in Florida. And it's important that if you're going to have an outdoor party that you make sure your guests are comfortable and that they're protected. Also, leaving the food outside, it does in the heat. It will spoil much quicker. If you shade it, it does help it some, but be sure you ice it down. And just think about things like, you know, the bugs and the birds and everything else flying by. A big mistake people make in doing evening parties is they don't really think of what lighting they need. So yes. I suggest when people are doing their parties, go outside at night where you're going to have your guests and make sure you have ample lighting and be proactive with that. Again, we always say our tents add that extra lighting, but even if you don't have a tent, add string lighting, add some kind of lighting that'll make it safe for your guests. Don't forget the bugs. We do have those nasty little mosquitoes here. So I always suggest when you're doing a little bathroom amenity basket, make sure you have some bug spray, have some sunscreen, just little thoughtful things you can do for your guests.
You do think of everything.
Well,
actually, I'm visualizing a tent with the poles, and I'm also visualizing electricity to light the tents. So then I think of the most important part to a guest in the summertime is trying to stay cool. So if there's electricity, then you can have fans too.
You can have fans, and there's actually misters. Like we rent misters that are really nice. They don't drench you. They're just a nice cooling factor. And one thing I also suggest, especially with kids' parties, if you're going to have bounce houses, make sure that you think about those. They get very, very hot, and you don't want your kids to get scorched.
Bounce houses.
The bounce houses are popular. They're popular even in the summer. Put them in a shaded area if you can. Wet them down if you can. Water slides are always fun. Some of the summer trends I thought I'd share with you. Pineapples are really big this year. So make sure that if you have pineapples, have fun with it. You can actually take the leaves of the pineapple and paint them multicolor. You can use them as centerpieces. You can use them as food holders. They can be great decor. We have a lot of fun with our fresh fruit. Another trend is to take a whole watermelon, gut it out, and use that as your punch bowl. You can go to a place like Bed Bath & Beyond and buy the spout and literally create your own pour out of a big watermelon. Keep your guests hydrated. Don't forget that, especially if you're going to have alcohol at your parties, be sure you have plenty of water.
Well, I'm going to call you soon because I'm now dreaming about a pineapple martini. Thank you so much, and have fun this summer.
Thank you.
everybody eats when they come to mind.
Stay cool out there. We'll be right back.
Next time on 1A, saving lives from opioid addiction. We lost more Americans to overdoses last year than we lost in the entire Vietnam War. Opioids, including some pain medicines, are turning cities into mass casualty zones. President Trump promised to dramatically expand access to treatment. What's been done, and what should we do? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hello, I'm Doug Hansard, and I listen to the Florida Times Union On Demand as read by WJCT Radio Reading Service volunteers. The sound quality is excellent. This is a great asset for people like me, sightless and on the go. The Florida Times Union Daily on the radio reading website at wjct.org/radio reading. Take advantage of it, and while you're there, register as a listener.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, some sad news to report this morning. Longtime Jacksonville environmental activist and attorney Bill Brinton passed away yesterday after a battle with lung cancer. He was 64. Brinton was a leading figure in everything from getting term limits approved in the city, as well as his significant impact in limiting billboards around town and protecting the area's tree canopy. He did this not just in Jacksonville, but led successful efforts around the country. Brinton appeared on First Coast Connect in May, just ahead of being honored by city leaders for his years of activism. It was his final interview before he passed. Take a listen. Bill Brinton, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, as a matter of fact, tomorrow has been designated as Bill Brinton Day in Jacksonville, so you're something. How about that?
Well, for a day.
You're king for a day. But it's one day of recognition for decades of work. In particular, you've been involved with so many things over the decades, but in particular, you have been the single-handed influence on limiting the number of billboards and outdoor advertising in this city. That is an overwhelmingly large legacy that you have created. Why did this become a passion of yours, and what's informed your commitment to it for so many years?
I was involved in a JCCI study in 1984-1985 on the subject of visual pollution. And I learned a lot in the JCCI study, and I, you know, naively thought that the recommendations of the study would be embraced by our elected officials, and we would see changes. But as happens frequently, mm-hmm. special interest prevailed, and there needed to be a way to find a different path. And so I knew that the charter could be amended to have a countywide prohibition on new billboards and to require the removal of billboards along local roads. And I thought that would work, and it did.
It worked for a while, a long while. The city charter was amended, and then for a long time, outdoor advertising in Jacksonville was really honestly kept to a minimum. And as a litigator, you went to court more than once, I believe, to keep it that way.
I've been in legal battles for most of the past 30 years. So we first faced efforts in the Florida legislature to undo what Jacksonville had done. And we had a lot of heroes in the legislature like Andrew Crenshaw and others from the Duval delegation that stepped up. But then we were in court starting around 1991, 1992. And for most of the years since then, there's been some type of litigation. More recent years, enforcing settlement agreements, but we continue to have a reduction of billboards in Duval County, and that will continue on into the future.
Why do you think this is such a hill to die on? You know, why do you feel so strongly about this?
I guess I'm just persistent.
In fact, you've been described as relentless.
Well, that would be accurate as well.
Uh-huh.
When I see something that's gone wrong, there are issues like this one where if you're going to really, you know, make it right, it turns into a lifetime commitment, much like tree conservation. I saw that go wrong, and then that became another lifetime commitment.
Not only on the environment, you also wrote the charter amendment to get term limits through the city council.
That's correct.
Why did that cause attract your attention?
Well, there was another JCCI study on the local election process, and one of the recommendations was to have term limits on city council members. But the council would not put the issue on the ballot, and so Bill Shy and Tilly Fowler and some others at the time, we gathered together and collective petitions and put it on the ballot to let the people decide.
And I misspoke. You're the founder of Scenic Jacksonville.
Right.
That was a typo on the script.
Well,
what do you think the impact? Oh, go ahead.
Well, you're correct. There's also Scenic Florida. That was I was a co-founder of.
What do you think the impact of Scenic Jacksonville and Scenic Florida have been over the decades? And what would you say to those who disagree with the mission of these organizations? They don't think there should be these stiff limits on this type of outdoor advertising?
Well, first I would say there are four states that have no billboards at all. Vermont and Maine removed their last billboards in the 1970s. Alaska has never had billboards, and they put the issue on a statewide ballot that Alaska shall be forever billboard free, and the billboards in Hawaii were removed about 100 years ago. So I would just point to those states. There's no clamor to have billboards. The clamor is to remove visual pollution from along the roadway.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of your question was...
you think opponents are wrong. Now, what about Bill Brinton Day? What are you going to do on your day?
I joked with Councilman Gulliford as whether I got a free cheeseburger that day.
And are you going to get an actual key to the city? Do they do that anymore?
I don't know, but I'm not sure what it would unlock. What I want to do is inspire people, especially young people. I mean, my mission right now, there's a mission dealing with undergrounding our overhead distribution lines, which maybe is my last battle. But I want to have young people to be educated about this visual environment. And I don't know whether it would be a merit badge in the Boy Scouts, but I want to see young people get involved, and young professionals. Like I was in my early 30s when I really caught the bug, and I want to see more people catch the bug.
Well, we thank you for being with us. As I mentioned, tomorrow is Bill Brinton Day in Jacksonville. There'll be a luncheon in his honor as well. Jacksonville attorney and activist Bill Brinton, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
That was our interview from May with the late Bill Brinton. He passed away yesterday at the age of 64 after a battle with lung cancer, and he will be missed. Back in a moment.
I'm 300 pounds. I play football and like roll around and drink beer. So I was a little bit hesitant when they came to me and said, hey, we want to send you away for a week to a all-intensive yoga retreat.
Join us next time for stories from the Moth's open mic Story Slam events around the country. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, she is the first woman ever to be named a hospital president in Baptist Health's 61-year history. Nicole Thomas is CEO of Baptist Medical Center South. She's responsible for all aspects of the second largest community hospital in this health system. Now, Thomas is also this month's Woman with Heart for the local nonprofit Volunteers in Medicine. They provide insurance to working people in this area. What's Woman with Heart all about? Find out now as Nicole steps into Studio 5 wearing an amazing diamond necklace. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to see you. And you are the June Woman with Heart in Jacksonville. Congratulations, first of all.
Thank you.
And that means you get to wear this stunning heart-shaped diamond necklace for the whole month of June. We've featured other women with heart on the show, but for those that aren't familiar with it, can you tell us a little bit about the importance of this effort and why you're wearing the necklace?
Absolutely. So the Woman with Heart Initiative is an innovative idea to raise awareness for our community, Jewel, called the Volunteers in Medicine. And as you mentioned, Volunteers in Medicine is a clinic that provides free primary and specialty care to the working uninsured. And I'm honored to be selected as one of the 12 women who really serves as an ambassador for Volunteers in Medicine. And so for this month, I am on a friend-raising and fundraising campaign to ensure everyone in Jacksonville knows about this resource. And we get to wear this incredible diamond necklace, as you mentioned, to start the conversation.
And do people come up and ask you about it? It's pretty incredible.
Absolutely.
So that gives you a chance to talk about this. And then at the end of the year, they're going to raffle the necklace off, right?
That is the plan.
Yeah, and raise some more money. And so with Volunteers in Medicine, of course, more important now than ever, there's a lot of uncertainty about health insurance. They stand in the gap in this community, helping people access care and health insurance. This is something that's close to your heart. You are now CEO of Baptist Medical Center South. You are the first female hospital president in that health system.
Yes.
Big deal. And it was exciting to see you get this promotion.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about how you view this issue of providing access to care through your role as CEO at Baptist South.
Sure. So Baptist and Volunteers in Medicine have quite a bit in common. Number one, we're committed to taking care of people whose lives have been interrupted by injury or illness. Mm-hmm. And we want to do that in a way that exceeds their expectation, meeting their service expectation and their clinical quality expectations. Mm-hmm. And both organizations are committed to doing that. And so it's an honor to support such a wonderful organization in our community that gives people access to care.
And people might not realize a lot of the patients and clients of Volunteers in Medicine, they're not unemployed or poor people. They're working people that just cannot afford insurance.
That's exactly
even with
right.
the reforms over the last several years.
Absolutely. It is a misconception that now that everyone has access to health insurance through the Affordable Care Act, not everybody can afford the insurance. And so Volunteers in Medicine stands in that gap and provides that high-quality care so that they can continue working and taking care of their families and, frankly, keeps them out of the emergency departments who are not equipped to provide primary care
keeps
services.
Them out of your facility. Not that you don't want people coming to the ER.
Indeed.
But,
it's not the best place for primary care and specialty care on an ongoing basis. We certainly want to take care of folks who have emergent conditions, but to manage the chronic conditions that people face, a clinic setting is better.
Now, let's talk about your fancy look here. You get to wear it for a couple of more weeks, Nicole Thomas, and then you have to give it back. It's kind of sad.
It is sad.
This comes from Beards Jewelry. Let's give them a plug. What is
Indeed.
It, like a $5,000 necklace, something like that?
Nearly $7,000
wow.
In value,
oh,
Beards Jewelry.
Do you get nervous wearing it?
I do. I'm going to take it off immediately.
Do you, and so every day when you put it on, are you like a little extra careful with it?
Extra careful and certainly wanting to do my part in helping spread the word about volunteers in medicine, even though I have to have extra security to wear this around every day.
What's the most common comment you get?
The most common comment is, wow, that's a beautiful necklace. And it's a great segue into me sharing why I'm wearing it.
Yeah, it's such a brilliant promotion. Kudos to Cindy Cooper at Volunteers in Medicine, who came up with this amazing idea.
Indeed.
And she is June's woman with heart, Nicole Thomas, CEO of Baptist Medical Center South. If you see her around town, in the next 2 weeks only, she will get to show off this stunning necklace. We tend to think of only Oscar nominees getting to borrow this finery, but regular old women in Jacksonville are getting to do it too, which is exciting. Go to vim-jax.org for more about Women with Heart. And Nicole Thomas, so good to see you. Thank you for sharing this with us.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your month.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
And that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchek. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app to listen anytime. Next on 1A, why more Americans died last year from drug overdoses than those lost fighting the war in Vietnam. I'm Melissa Ross, and this has been First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.